Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the mystical realm. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, gifted souls step up to the mic sharing their spiritual journey. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their awakening, creating a symphony of enlightenment. This isn't just another interview show. This is where divine insights are channeled and universal truths are revealed. So crank up your stereo and sit back, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next transformative chapter of your soul's purpose. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. Today, we have a guest who is near and dear to my heart. We have the person whom I would consider to be responsible for so many wonderful things that have happened in my life these past 6 years. This person was responsible for my interest in meditation, in Reiki, in being certified in Reiki, and probably most important of all of these things would be my unquenchable thirst for knowledge in the area of spirituality. I guess you could say she was my first instructor and mentor in the life that I now have the honor of living. Please allow me to introduce the lovely and brilliant Miss Kelly Schwagel. Welcome, Kelly.
Oh my gosh. Hi. What an incredible introduction.
Well, it's all true. Fortunately, it's all true. And I do owe so much to you. And I should have added my favorite voice for guided meditations. I love your meditations so much.
Thank you. So you have the voice for them too. So I hope you record thanks. Many.
Well, you know, thanks to you. I've added to my repertoire that will be coming out soon. So
good.
I appreciate good. That.
Yeah. Thank very you, thank soothing.
You. Thanks. So what I'd like to do right now is maybe instead of me going down your background is have you discuss your background.
Okay. Well, I'm going to actually then I think start to help people to understand how I came to where I am. And not to give a, you know, back when I was born, but really, I started having out-of-body experiences when I was about 6 years old and started to consciously speak to spirit when I was 8. And my clairvoyance has never ended. So a lot of times they say that children, it ends when they enter into pubescent, but it didn't with me. And I ended up trying to pretend that I wasn't clairvoyant and wasn't odd, which I was. And right. And I took the route and I got 3 degrees in education and I was a teacher and a principal and I worked for the state in education and then went, no, this is not me. I had already become a Reiki master. I was already doing tarot. I was already helping people with my clairvoyance. And I decided to leave everything and move to California, opened a holistic healing center, and started working with people. And it was from there that my skills grew, where I realized I can speak to animals. I'm a medical intuit. I can remote view. I'm telepathic. I, when in certain circumstances. So I don't know what you're thinking right now.
But, I'm staring.
Right, it doesn't work that way. But if you gave me something with a lot of big emotion, I would hear it in my head. So, but also being able to feel what people feel and understand their emotions, I'd be able to channel guides and speak to those who are deceased. These things all unfolded over time. Then I left everything and went on the road and wrote some books. So I wrote 4 books, published 3. I ended up traveling the world for 7 years. And then I ended up back in my hometown, in my home state of Wisconsin, in my hometown.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes. And after my father passed, my ex-husband passed, my mother had heart surgery, I realized I'm not going anywhere. And I decided I'd start a salt and spice company, a whole holistic salt and spice. Did that. Really hard to get a business going there. So I'm also a realtor. And I still take clients every day. And my specialty, I will say, with clients is emotional healing. Understanding what is blocking them. What do they need? What do they need to move on their journey? And what insights can I give? Along with, of course, the medical intuiting and tarot.
Well, holy cow. Now, I've known you for, like I said, 6 years, just about 6 years. And there were some new things in there that I didn't know, but that was really before we met, some of those things that you were talking about. But so something very interesting about Kelly's perspective as it relates to not only the presentations, which she's given many, many, and her classes, is this, that a lot of people out there consider this to be woo-woo and have no scientific basis to it. And what Kelly did, which opened the door for me personally, was in her presentation and in her discussions with me, she incorporated scientific proof, scientific studies that supported what she was saying, which in my opinion was a unique perspective and a unique way to present this material that I hadn't heard before. And for some people, that's important. And I was one of those some people in this instance. And for others, it doesn't really matter. And they like all the pomp and circumstance of the ritualistic processes that go into things. But for me personally, it seemed like it was a more grounded and rooted perspective to take.
Yeah, I love quantum physics. I actually, before I went into education, I was actually pre-med. And although I was married at the time, I got pregnant and went, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be a surgeon right now. So let's be a teacher. I can see this child. So I had all of my bio courses. And so science and quantum physics and understanding what was going on from a scientific aspect became really important for me, just personally. And then I loved teaching that to others because I found it so fascinating that, there's a reason why this is happening. You know, this isn't just, you know, we can say the word woo-woo, but I really call it reality. There, a physicist that I listened to one time said, and I thought this was awesome. He said, you know, we always thought that those who had one foot in this world and one foot in another were a little unbalanced. But actually, now we know they're the most balanced because they understand not only the physical, but the metaphysical or the quantum world.
Hmm.
And I loved that.
It makes sense. Again, here we go. What she says makes sense. it does to me, and I'm sure it would for a lot of our listeners, especially those who have a little bit of skepticism in them for that sort of thing, which, believe me, I completely understand because it is a 180 from most of our belief systems growing up, right? You know, because we have a belief system that starts at a very early age, 2-3 years old is when that starts to set in. And we oftentimes don't change until that awakening period occurs. And for some, well, let's just put it this way. For some folks that experience an awakening, they may be thinking it's a psychotic event or something. And they're not crazy. They're not any of those things. They're not bipolar necessarily. You know, obviously there are people that are, but what I'm referring to isn't the case. There's nothing wrong with them mentally. They're just experiencing an awakening. Do you remember your awakening to this, or did you not have that because it happened at such a young age?
You know, it didn't happen that way, and only because I never forgot. I had been speaking to spirit for so long, you know, like I said, since I remember my first time as being six. But I will say that I did have a moment in time where I realized I couldn't keep going on the way that I was, trying to be a normal person in a normal world, because I wasn't normal. And it was almost as though I was being non-authentic, trying to stay in a very conservative, structured life that I'm not.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, if you met me on the street, you'd never know. You're not going to know I'm anything other than Kelly. But
exactly.
Inside of me, realized there was something way more.
You know, and that's something that I say to people all the time, too, especially when they're surprised by, you know, let's say that we're having a conversation and something comes up and I'll respond to whatever's going on in spiritual context, and they look at me almost they move back, physically move back and look at me from like another angle, and it's just like I do know how to take it now because it's happened regularly, and it's usually I know I don't look like I'm some spiritual guy, but I am. You know, it's not a bad thing at all, because I feel, and we've talked about this before, but I feel that this type of approach to life, and it's not even approach, it's just who you are at a certain point. You know, at first you may be trying, but it seems the more you try when you're in this world, the harder it is, because then it's resistance because you're forcing something.
Yes.
But the more you allow your authentic self to come in, the better it is, because people in the world need this right now. They really, truly do. In all facets, I'm not just talking about your personal life. I'm also talking about your professional life. There is a place for it. And I'm not saying go into the office tomorrow with a bundle of sage and start saging the office for evil energies or negative energies. But I am talking about mindfulness. I am talking about empathy. I'm talking about all of those things, being present when somebody's in the room trying to have a conversation with you, as opposed to looking at your phone, going through emails, things of that nature, because you miss so much. You just really do, in my opinion.
Can I say something about, sure, you know, kind of just backing up a little bit? You had talked about, you know, kind of showing up authentically, and how it's very hard for a lot of people who do go through the spiritual awakening to present themselves. You know, you said you don't just walk in, you know, into the workplace and shout that you are. But I'm going to tell you something I did. And I do want to bring in a little science with this. And so when I worked for the State of Education, I had actually had my own company where I was training educators and superintendents and doing strategic planning. And they said, we're going to hire you because you're taking all of our business. And we really, they made me a great offer. And I started working for the state, and they had to develop an entire department around me. Right. And I say this because they said, we want you to come in and teach our leadership team at the state level how you do what you do. How do you get so many districts to want to work with you? And I brought in the human Taurus. And I said, I said, and that I'll bring in some science with this. And I said, you know, we all have energy around us. And inside of the energy that we are, inside of our cells, we break down into atoms, right? Mm-hmm. Inside of all atoms, we actually break down into little points of light called photons that carry your conscious thought. And they're not just stuck inside of you. They're swirling around you in this torus. And that torus is hitting everybody you walk into the room with. And if you're non-authentic, they're going to know it. They just don't know why. If you're authentic, they're going to know it. And for me, when I walked into that executive boardroom to talk woo-woo, I had to believe in myself. And I had to believe that what it is that I was talking about had merit. And if I walked in there going, oh my God, they're never going to believe me. They're going to think I'm a dork. They're going to you know, call me frou-frou la-la. It wouldn't have worked because, again, those biophotons are hitting them. My confidence in who I am and my authenticity had to hit them too. So when it hit them, I remember it was probably weeks later, it was the executive director came up to me and he said, gosh, Kelly, everything you do is through intuition, isn't it? And I said, yeah, pretty much it does. Yeah, everything that I do. I work and I think and I do, but I bring everything through intuitively and through inspiration first. You know, and so it's really important to understand that as we show up in our spiritual beingness, be authentic. Mm-hmm. And can I say one more thing about that? Because it's so important. So many people who have their awakening create an identity around it. And I can't say that I didn't do that same thing when I first, you know, stepped into left education and went into the spiritual world. I created an identity. But when you do that, that's also non-authentic.
Right. Yes.
And it's so critical to step back and lose the identity. You know, you don't have to wear feather earrings and tie dye and shake a rattle. You know, you can just be you. And the more that you are you, the more that it actually normalizes it for other people. Our gifts become normal because we're not trying to put on an act or right. It's not even an act, but we're not trying
to be something. A costume or mask or something.
A title.
Yeah. And you know what? And that's something that happens regularly too. And it's not by necessarily yourself doing that, giving yourself a title. It's other people giving you that label. Let's just call it a label in this instance, because, and I wouldn't be any different necessarily. So if you had somebody coming in a robe and these linen pants and beads and long hair and beard, and you know, you'd be like, okay, you're walking into a boardroom. I get that you're being you, but are you being you? No. You know, you start to question some of those things. So, I mean,
your audience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that would be, you know, what is the let he without sin cast the first stone? That would be me throwing a rocket at somebody else for, well, don't label that person. I did the same thing years and years ago. And then you just stop.
Right.
And it's, you're right though, too, because as much as you try to separate from ego, you really can't separate from ego. You can understand your ego and you can understand those triggers that pop up and step back and be an observer and go, huh, I wonder why I reacted that way initially.
Yeah.
What do I have to heal inside of me still?
Yeah.
To get past that. And that's something too, that I guess through the course of writing a book and doing the research and different things like that, I'll use Dolores Cannon as an example, where she has the 12 stages of a spiritual awakening. You reach stage 12 in that and you go down this list. Okay. Check, 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 check. Yeah, I'm done. You're not.
No,
you're never done. And that was the thing it's almost a misnomer that if you get to number 12 and you check number 12 off, oh, I'm done. I can sit back and go to the mountaintop and meditate all day. It's not that way. It's a constant evolution of who you are. And you're a great example of that because of the paths It's not just one path that you've taken over the course of your life, the paths that you've taken.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to say, oh, you know what? I've done it all right here. I'm done. But you didn't. You took a left, then you took a right, then you know.
And the lessons keep coming. I tell my clients all the time that lessons keep coming. They're never going to stop. I don't care how evolved you become or how wise you become or even how confident you become. They don't stop. It's just that they're easier to take. You're like, oh, yes. Here's a lesson. What am I supposed to be learning here?
Right.
Okay. Okay. Right. And another thing about going through this whole process is that part, I think, of what we're doing as beings who come here as souls, having a human experience, when we do become evolved, this is about learning to work the human. And this came up for me when you were talking before about how when you're in a situation, you have to know the human. You can't butt up against the human. And if the human is judging you, you know, you can't get in their face about it. You can't try to be more woo-woo. You just got to know your audience and know your people and know how to work human. And this also means knowing how to work us. And there's so many levels to learning to work the human, but I'll leave it at that one for a moment. Just learn to understand human nature. And the more you do, the more you're going to thrive in this world and the more lessons you'll be able to bring people.
100%. And that's where the meet people where they are adage or saying comes in, is you have to do that. And it's not a beat you over the head with it type of scenario either. For example, I have a friend and we were golfing and he's, I won't say spiritual, I will say religious, because he is Catholic, very religious, just a great guy. And when I was telling him about the podcast, he said, I haven't heard it yet. And I said, well, you should listen. He goes, well, what's it about? And I told him spirituality, and he immediately went, oh, eye roll now, you know? And I said, yeah, you know what? It's not for everybody, and I get that. But my whole idea behind this was to allow for a safe space for people to land and to come. Or if they're curious about something, too, or if they've had an experience and they go, that was just weird, and they chalk it up to coincidence, but there is no coincidence. So what is it? And I just let it go, and then we get up to the next tee box, and I said, hey, have you ever had a situation where you were thinking about somebody and the phone rang and it was them? He goes, oh, yeah, happens all the time. I said, that's intuition. And he goes, wow, I guess you're right. Yeah. And then he started telling me more and more and more. And I said, see, you're a very intuitive person, and it's not surprising to me at all that you are. Knowing who you are as a kind, giving, charitable person that doesn't think of himself first, you're a person of service, that it's no wonder to me. But I said, what ends up happening is, though, and again, I'll use the belief system, we are almost indoctrinated to think that that's crazy there, and that you're not supposed to be, you know, if you believe in the Bible, then you're not supposed to believe in these people who are clairvoyants or healers. And when that comes up, and it comes up regularly, when people are like, ah, that's a bunch of bullshit, I'll just say, well, wasn't Jesus a healer? Mm-hmm. Then it usually stops, and it gets them out of that loop, the response loop of labeling, criticism, and things like that, and gives them that brief moment that they can stop, they step back and take a breath and go, yeah, he was.
Can I mention something about the Essenes in this? Please. So do you know who the Essenes are or were?
I'll be honest with you. I am not a Bible scholar by any stretch of the imagination. So no.
They weren't. Yeah. So the Essenes were a sect of people who lived in the time of Jesus. And they were spiritual. They weren't religious.
Okay.
Okay. So they were wonderful. They believed that everything in life, every religion was perfect for the age of soul, that everything is based in math and science, you know, and here's what they had about those who are, what they said about those who are asleep. They said, you know, we don't try to awaken the sleeping souls. We comfort them. They're not ready to awaken. We have no business doing that. They said, those who are ready to be awakened, they will find us. And we will help awaken them. And those who are already awake will just help keep them on their path. And I have lived my life with that, because wherever I go, I'm going to get something psychically on someone. It doesn't matter. I'm going to feel them. I'm going to know, they, you know, go and get a drink at the bar and know that, you know, the bartender has mommy issues. I don't need to tell him that.
Right.
You know, just because I get it doesn't mean that I should. He will find me.
Yeah.
If that's right. Just like people are going to find this podcast, those who are ready to find this will. We're not here to convince anyone.
Right.
We're here to comfort the sleeping souls. And I'll use the word of the Bible, right? They know not what they do.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they, what those who need religion have it, and I'm glad they have it. You know, those who are in a cult need the cult. It's based on the age of their soul, and I'm glad they have it. I'm not here to, you know, I don't want anyone harmed. There's some harmful cults, right? And I will do anything that I can for mankind. However, I don't get to grab someone by their shoulders and go, will you wake up? If you just knew, if you only knew, for crying out loud. You know, and it helps navigate this world. Again, it's working the human.
Well, you know what? And I think not everyone is like you, which, yeah, you know, it's understandable because you are the only Kelly Schwagel that I'm aware of.
Thank God.
Yeah. You said it, not me. No. But it's one of those things that it takes a little bit of time for you to come to grips with that, because first off, you're very excited about this new discovery that you've had. Yes. And you want to scream it from the mountaintop, and you want to tell people how good you feel because of this. But you quickly, or not so quickly sometimes, realize, like you said, not everybody's ready. And they're on their own path. It's their own journey. And it's not your job, not my job, I should say, to convince or change anybody or anybody's way of thinking. It's theirs. It's their responsibility. It's their job, their duty, whatever.
And we don't really change their mind anyway.
No,
no matter what you said, you really don't. And can I say a little bit of science here, which is when we speak, it has a frequency. The intention behind our words has a frequency. And if they are at a different frequency, they are at, I need fear-based religion. If that's what they need, okay, then their frequency, they can't receive your frequency of the words that you're saying. They can't. And I'm not saying one is better than the other. You're just on different radio stations.
Right. That's it.
Ages of soul are not better or worse than each other. They're just different.
Yeah, there's no comparison in my book. I think, anyway.
I always say, you would never look at a two-year-old in our society and say, will you just grow up and get married and drive a car? And it's it's ludicrous, right? But it's the same thing as a baby, infant, or young soul. You wouldn't look at them and say, you know, can you just believe what I believe? Can you understand that this, we are souls having a human experience? They're not ready to believe that.
No.
And that's okay.
It is. It 100%. You know, you started, I'm going to jump around, and I do that. That's my ADHD me. But you had mentioned something, and I thought you were going to start going down the road of neurodivergence. And maybe I was wrong when you were talking about that, but it seemed like it was right there on the doorstep to go, okay, go on in. So
may I?
Yeah, please.
So one of the things that has really from, I've given tens of thousands of sessions, okay, from people mm-hmm. all over the world, right? And I've heard from so many of the older souls. And one of the things that I've really understood is how many clairvoyant people are neurodivergent. And neurodivergent just means that you're atypical in the way that you process information and atypical in the way that that processed information views the world. And there is no medical diagnosis for neurodivergence. It's really a descriptive way. But I will say that those who are neurodivergent, meaning we're not neurotypical, we don't mm-hmm. think like everyone else, it's a very unique and valuable way of seeing the world. However, there are some incredible, incredible things that people have learned about neurodivergence. And one of the things that I have come to understand is how many neurodivergent people can short circuit very easily, have to learn to understand themselves, and they have to learn to understand their sensitivity. Can I ask you this, and this may be you and it may not be you, but sure. very often neurodivergent people or those who are very highly sensitive or what Carl Jung called spiritually sensitive individuals, mm-hmm. they're called two. I call them two, T-O-O. You are too emotionally intense. You are too difficult. You're yeah. too different. You're too sensitive. You're too out there. You're too loud. You're too moody. You know, you're too, you're just yeah. too. Were
and
you too?
I wasn't. I still am a two. Yeah. yeah. And it's really interesting that you said that because I recount this in one of the chapters that I'm writing, and I think I sent it to you about the two. We'll use the T-O-O. When I was in third grade, my teacher, now this wasn't unwarranted someday, so I will tell you, I was too chatty, too busy, couldn't sit still. Class clown, whatever you want to call it, I was that, right? But there were also times when I wasn't, and I probably broke her, I guess, is what it comes down to, where I get tossed out into the hall. Yeah. And then it would be me having to try to figure out, and this is third grade, I think you're 9 years old or something like that, nine, maybe 10. And you're left to your own devices out there. And I'll go back to the belief system that is ingrained in you. If something happened like that, you're being disciplined for something. You start, well, what did I do? You start, oh, I must have done, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. So you start all of that negative talk in there. And it was, yours was the first, because I hadn't thought of that until a session. And what I'm talking about with in this particular instance is when Kelly and I, we would meet regularly. And when Kelly and I were meeting one day, she just said, what happened to you when you were 9 or 10 years old? And I was like, I don't know. I had no idea. And she said, well, would you be interested in doing a meditation? And since meditation was so new to me, I was like, oh yeah, let's do this. I was thinking, oh, here comes the pineal or something like this. And it wasn't, that was the meditation I was most familiar with. Cause I listened to it all the time because you were like, stop the chitta chatta in your brain, stop the chitta chatta.
I said that.
Yeah, you did say it stuck with me. So we went through this meditation and it was the closest thing to hypnosis that I may have experienced up until that point. And it wasn't until just now that I put that together, which is odd, but you brought me back to that time and I was able to go through it, but it was such an emotional trauma for me that Kelly, also being probably one of the world's largest empaths, could feel that and was struggling when we were going through it. And I mean struggling emotionally, because she was getting choked up and crying because it was something that I had suppressed, right? I suppressed that. I didn't want to think about it anymore. I didn't want to even remember it. So I didn't. And which is an amazing thing.
Can I clarify something about that?
Sure.
The reason, and that is very atypical. Normally, I just, you know, I can feel the energy going through me, but his energy, he's such a big container for energy. And it was so repressed inside of him, and him being such an old soul, when it came out, literally, I had tears coming down my eyes and I could barely talk because there was so much sadness coming out and I wasn't feeling it. But I felt it coming through me, and it literally came through in my tears. And that is atypical. That is because you were such a big container, and it was so repressed.
Absolutely. It certainly was. But the interesting thing about that, you think about hypnosis in general, that some hypnosis that you go under, you don't recall. And some you do. I think it depends on the intention. But I remember that, and since that time had been able to work through that and heal that piece of me. So that was huge. That was absolutely huge to me.
It was so important in the work that I do. I actually say this, that I'm going to bring you into a cross between hypnosis and meditation. But the hypnosis is where you are in charge. I have no interest in being in charge of you. I need to guide you to be in charge of you in this hypnotic state so that you can take this and keep doing it when we're done. My job is not to be the all healer. My job is to get you to figure out how to heal you. So you can take it from there.
Yeah. And that's a big difference. And that's a differentiating factor between what somebody's perception of hypnosis or hypnotherapy maybe, but in this particular instance, that was probably the real beginning of me healing, I guess I can say. Because it had been buried under years and years and years and years of life, right?
And you know, we were talking about the neurodivergence, and I do have to say a few things, because what you experienced is what so many people, actually everyone on this planet, has experienced. But I would say the mature and older souls are meant to actually get in and heal it. Okay, yes. We are meant to get inside and heal it. And others will heal at a particular level, but not necessarily in this way, right? And I do have to say, there is an incredible study that people are doing right now where they're finding the link between neurodivergence, clairvoyance, sensitivity, and chronic illness. And yes. So I've got, like I said, I've had 10,000 some sessions. I've got a good statistical analysis of those who are clairvoyant and who also have an autoimmune, myself included. Wow. Okay. It mostly happens in females, those who are born female, and not to say it's only, but typically these three are crossing together. And what happens is that we end up processing information so very, very deeply, and we're so highly aware, because here's the science again, neuroplasticity that we have it basically is a way in which we are rewiring ourselves in response to experiences. Our neuroplasticity, right, is really heightened. And so that actually means that we are picking up all the time on patterns of the psychic language, and we don't even realize it. So this psychic ability that we have, right, is hypersensitive, which means that we are hypersensitive to environmental, hypersensitive to everything outside of us. And those who are in this camp, if you are a two, if you are, especially if you are neurodivergent, chronically ill and sensitive and clairvoyant, please understand that you will short circuit. You, especially if you're female, and I say that not to at all to diss males. We just know that females are a little more complex in some ways. And and the study actually says it's mostly in those who are born female that we tend to have to understand what short circuits us. And so I'm working a lot with psychic people right now to understand what short circuits them and how to adjust themselves to know what they need and to understand themselves better and not shame themselves.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. You know, you'd mentioned short circuit a few different times now. What is that short circuit experience for some?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me talk about, I'll use a situation, right? Mm-hmm. I have a client who is very psychic. She's very sensitive. She also has an autoimmune. All right. Mm. And what happens is that when she's out in public, she can get on because she's constantly picking up on everyone's emotions and how they're feeling, very sensitive to the energy in a room. If it's negative, if it's charged, you know, if there's, you know, whatever is going on, can sometimes understand that people are judging her without even understanding it. So because that happens, sometimes she'll be on social overload and just she'll start to short circuit, right?
Right.
If so, that's one short circuit. Another short circuit might be there's a lot of stress going on in the world, right? There's a lot of she can feel the stress in the world, or he, and can feel stress in their life. Something's a little off, right? And maybe they ate something wrong, and this really causing some sensitivity. They might wake up in the morning feeling this almost like overload of emotions or overload of something going on, and they'll feel short-circuited. And what they need to do, this is knowing themselves. You have to catch that this is what you're in. You have to know how to clear your energy. You have to know how to cleanse it. You have, and quickly, okay, you have to give yourself some time to move slowly through your morning to adjust. You have to know what to eat, what to put in your body. You have to know what is going to work for you.
And also listen to at that point too, because nutrition is more than just food.
It's, or food is medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to the news or you're listening to something that's going to perpetuate that, distance yourself.
Yeah. You got to have a good morning routine, and you also have to catch when you're getting overloaded or overstimulated, or there's too much psychic perception going on around you. You can learn to block it. I've learned to block it. I walk outside, I zip up, and then I walk outside, and I'm like, can't touch this. Boom, boom, right? You really do. You have to learn how to you know, zip up so that doesn't affect you. But if you're not good at that yet, you are going to short circuit.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up thinking, I'm insecure, I'm oversensitive, and you're going to shame yourself. You can't do that.
Right. Well, that's the first person you're going to look at to put cast blame towards is yourself.
Yeah.
Typically. I mean, that's me. I'm like, oh man, what did I do? So there's one of my more recent mentors, and unfortunately she passed, is Pat Longo. And Pat has a wonderful meditation and saying. She often said, before you go out into the world, surround, ground, and shield. And the grounding is obviously, I shouldn't say obvious, that we know how to ground, but the surround is surrounding yourself in the white light of God or source or whomever, but in this instance, it's God. And the shield is quite literally having the ability to block and stop movement into your space. It's shielding you from anything else. You're not going to allow that in.
Can I frame that in another way? Because you're absolutely right. I 100% Please. Back this. But take this all internal now, right? Instead mm-hmm. of surrounding yourself with light, open up the top of your head and ask for God energy, source energy, light energy, your higher self to just become a part of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. When it comes to guarding yourself, it isn't about guarding, because that's almost like defensive.
Pushing
right?
away, right?
Right. And, you know, don't get in here. You know, it's more like when I said can't touch this, it's like, this is my house. Get out of the house.
Gotcha.
I own this beautiful temple. This houses my soul. You don't get to come in here and mess with this. You don't get to affect my energy. You don't get to steal or drain me. This is mine. I own it. So you take your power in your being and say, nobody gets to get into this field, right? That's different. It's not Love defensive. That. It's offensive, right. But not in a negative way. And then what was the one in the middle that you said?
Surround, ground.
Ground. So the grounding is it safe to be in this body? Am I in control of my destiny in this world, or am I constantly reacting to this world, reacting and reacting? And that's something I teach clients too, is, you know, you can't, if you're reacting to the world always has the power. Where's your power?
Correct. The locus of control.
Yes. And so when you're grounding, you're grounded. When it's okay to be in this body because you've healed the stuff, the trauma, like you were talking about earlier, you've been able to address the trauma that you've gone through. You've been able to understand yourself, go through forgiveness, self-forgiveness mostly.
Right.
Then it's safe to be in this body. You want to be it. And when you walk this earth, it's like, this word earth is not unsafe. I'm creating a reality, and whatever comes into my world is for my highest and greatest good anyway. So bring it on. What you got?
Right.
Right. Right. You know, and that's that courage that we develop when we heal, when we go on this healing journey. So I think awakening, it needs to come with an internal, not just awakening of the spirituality, which keeps us external. It's understanding that you're awakening, and now let's heal what's inside. Take that out. Right? So right. that you can blossom. And it's the story of the phoenix.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember in the back of my book, I wrote that poem about the phoenix, but in a very practical way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, it's on my shelf right here.
Yeah.
I should get it out.
Well, in the poem, it basically is saying the phoenix, you know, is this mythical creature who flies to earth and burns herself down to a white ash only so she can fly again in radiant wings, right? But the way that I write about it is that we are souls who fly down to earth. We get burned by the human condition. Right. We, you know, fall into a white ash, and we, until we're ready to stand up, shake off the dust, do the healing, mm-hmm. right? Right? Find our balance and find our footing. We're a balance between logic and creativity, and a balance between push and force and allowing. You know, we're all of this balance. And then we start to find our, you know, after we've done this healing and our growth and balancing, then we can radiate as this golden light that we are.
That's great. That's a wonderful way to frame it out. I really like that. And I had forgotten about the, which is no surprise, the, at the end of the book, the poem. So yeah, I'm the guy who goes to the store for milk and forgets milk. So
it's, but you know what? Join the club.
Yeah. You know what? Speaking of forgot, one thing that we forgot to mention was your theatrical, your thespian side and musical side, which is quite, I like it. I think that it's very fun, and I think that it allows for your creativity to come out even more.
So, can I share a story about that?
Please do.
I think there is always a part of me, because of one of my biggest lessons of this life was insecurity. That when I was in my 20s, I would have to go hide in the bathroom just to kind of regroup and breathe and not go into, you know, anxiety.
You know, that's shocking to me, by the way.
I know everybody says that, but that's because I did my healing. And when I, even after I had my holistic healing center, I wasn't, you know, I'd go to ecstatic dance, but I wouldn't really let go. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I went to Belize and it was when I'd really done a lot. I'd moved to the top of Los Padres Mountains the year before and sat a year in my silence. You know, nobody around me, there was no neighbors, there was nothing. I was up there with bear and bobcat, you know, and I really grew and I really let go and I really evolved. And when I gave away all my possessions and went on the road and moved to Belize to begin, you know, at one of the beginnings, I learned to dance. And I learned to dance like nobody was looking. And I realized I sat there going, I want to dance. And I don't really give a shit what anyone thinks about. Nobody knows me here. Nobody knows me. And I'm going to dance like nobody is looking. And I danced. And eventually, so there was this Sunday fun day that always happened in Belize on Ambergris Key and at Crazy Canucks.
Great name.
Great place. But they had this awesome live band. And one of the guys came up who, you know, everybody went on the island. All the expats went. And so he came up to me and he's like, you do realize, Kelly, that we all come here to listen to the band, but also to watch you dance.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And then I started getting up on stage and singing, you know, so then I'd walk into a bar or whatever, a beach place, and they'd be like, Kelly Schwegel's in the house. And I didn't care anymore.
Right.
I didn't care.
How cool.
Yeah. But I wasn't always that way. And I want to send that message to your listeners that we can grow into this, you know,
that's important. Important mm-hmm. message there.
Yes, really important. You know, when we do our inner healing, we get so many rewards. Life is so much easier.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
One of my quotes is, you know, doing your soul's work, your inner work is hard work, but it is the only work that makes your life easy.
Right. No truer words have been said. Yeah. So, and it isn't, you know, that's what I tell people sometimes in coaching sessions and different things like that, the answer is simple. It's not easy. And that's true. Because if you were to tell someone to get to the root of happiness, you just have to be your authentic self. Sounds really simple, but it's not easy to be your authentic self.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah. But I will say that it, you know, what's the hardest thing about doing any of your inner work is taking the first step.
Absolutely.
Once you take the first step, wasn't the rest kind of just all unfolded?
Automatically. It's a domino effect. And once you start to create that energy, the energy doesn't want to stop. It just wants to keep going and flowing and looking, seeking more and more.
Yeah. Do you remember when I shared this in the book, but I'll repeat it for your listeners. When I really, really began to do some deep inner healing, I had been like, I had a really bad abusive boyfriend and we broke up and I, you know, I was struggling financially and I hated my career and I was just like, I wasn't in a good place and I was sick all the time. And I remember talking to a woman who had helped me with my clairvoyance. And she said, you know, Kelly, just describe yourself to me. And I'm like, okay. So I'm confident and I'm a good mom and I'm pretty and I'm really energetic and I'm successful. And she's like, okay. Yeah, we're going to go behind all that, okay? And I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Here's the makeup remover. Go ahead.
And I was not willing to get vulnerable at first. I was like, no, I am. And she's like, you might be, but what's behind all that? And then she kept pushing me. And I was getting a little mad. I'm like, come on, what are you talking about? And she's like, come on, Kelly. And I finally broke down. And I realized that I had four statements about myself. And I realized that I thought that I was sick, I was bad, I was worthless, and I was broken. Mm. And I realized I truly believed those things. And later that day, I got into a meditation that I thought was 5 minutes long. It was an hour and a half. And I got in, and I was not a meditator at the time. I got in and I was like, tell me why. Why do I think I'm bad? Why do I think I'm worthless? You know, what is so, why do I think this? And I just got deeper and deeper and I started to see memories. The dumbest things, being bullied on the playground, you know, being teased, you know, not being nurtured, inappropriate sexual experiences in high school, being a partier, you know, throwing myself under the bus, my divorce, you know, all these things. And they were just building and building. I'm crying so bad. I had tears and snot running out of my nose. And I was a mess. Like I was a hot mess. And I came out of that meditation. And incidentally, I even saw two past lives that were affecting me in this life. And I saw everything about them and how they were affecting me. It was pretty intense. And so I came out of that meditation and I just felt so light. And the next day, I acknowledged these me's and I'm like, I'm so sorry. The next day I felt this thing and I'm like, what is this thing? What am I feeling? I'm like, oh my God, that's self-love. Mm. Oh, and I realized I had never felt it before.
Wow.
Never. And I remember just being on a week of just this high of, oh my God, everything is love. because I felt so great.
But that's it. When you start loving yourself first, then you talk about frequency, or you mentioned frequency before, and then the lower frequency of, you know, vengeful religion or God or what have you. When you have that frequency, when it's truly yours and it's love, what happens? More comes in.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Like. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we have to go on to the third pillar.
Yes.
Of the show, which is the musical questions. And yes. I'm sorry to be so abrupt, but we're we're up against the tyrant of time. Okay. It's musical question time.
I wrote down my answers.
Yay. So as I mentioned, this is the part of the show when I have the chance to ask the guest some musical questions, because I've mentioned it on every show that I think that music is the tie that binds us all together.
Yes.
And I do believe everyone has a soundtrack that accompanies their life. So here comes the question. Question number one, what was the first song you fell in love with from the radio?
Actually, the one that I can remember, I was like 12 or 13 years old, but Blondie was out. Ooh, and that song, yeah. The Tide Is High. Oh my God. I thought it was a female group and they were just amazing and they were gorgeous. And I was like, they were so 1980s. I think that was like, and yeah, it was 1980 that came out. And I was just in love with it.
Fantastic. You're the first one that had mentioned a Blondie song. So that's great.
Yeah.
Well, no surprise, I guess. So did your family have a song that would come on the radio or something like that if you were on a road trip or vacation somewhere and you just start singing?
Well, this is a funny story because my parents were even though they were professionals, they were very theatrical. I watched them in musicals and plays, and we actually did the Schwegel Family Singers, you know, and we did, I mean, like all types of theater. But the funny thing was my dad had this very deep voice, and he would, we'd be on road trips, and all of a sudden my dad in the silence of the car would go, manam, manam, and four girls would all go, beep, beep. We go, in these little girl voices. And even to the day he died, if he ever did manam manam, wherever we were, we'd all go, beep,
that's so cool. I love that. That is so freaking cool. So let's go back to your senior year in high school. And you're cruising with your friends.
Yeah.
And the song comes on and the windows are down. What song is that? What are you screaming?
Well, okay. So first of all, Prince was huge, you know, so Little Red Corvette and, you know, that stuff was all out there. Love John Mellencamp, John Cougar, then Mellencamp.
Yep.
But I think the even though this song, I think it had come out in like 83, girls just want to have fun. You know, when I'm with my girlfriends, you know, little Cindy Lauper and yeah, we love that. We dress up like that.
Oh, it was the time to do it, right? It is
so much fun. Oh yeah, I graduated in 1986, so I'm an 80s chick.
I was a little 2 years before you. I graduated in 84, so I understand. This is my music, so I love it. So when you went to school, when you went to college, did your musical taste change at all? Or
night and day.
Really? Okay.
Oh, night and day. And to this day, I can tell you that I'm still like a Van Morrison fan, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, The Who, Eric Clapton, Steve Ray Vaughan. Went backwards. Yeah, absolutely. I was actually at the concert that Steve Ray Vaughan died at. It was an Eric Clapton, Steve Ray Vaughan concert. And I was there walking down the other side of the ski hill when his helicopter hit the mountain.
Alpine
Valley. Yeah. That music really shaped me. And then, of course, as I got older, then, of course, I had my chicks, you know. Then I had Sheryl Crow and Alanis Morissette and Sarah McLachlan and, you know, it's just, you know.
Bonnie Raitt.
Yes, absolutely. You evolve, you know, with your music.
You do. And for me, I went to, it wasn't quite folk music, but yet again, it was. In the 80s and into the 90s, which was U2. I really became a deep dive guy into U2. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
So do you have a song that if you need a little pick me up that you play, get some energy going?
I'm going to tell you something. It's anything I can sing to. I actually have a singing list playlist that I created on my Spotify so that I can get in there and just the minute I can sing, my soul opens up and it doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't. As long as I'm singing, I've got a smile on my face. But I also know if I need to calm, that I'm going to, you know, of course, listen to some mantras, you know, some really great mantras, little Deva Pramal, you know, and just kind of calm myself. But really to bring myself up, it's just singing.
I wish I could pull out my phone and show you my Spotify list that says songs I wish I could still sing because I hurt my voice, but I still sing them. But I used to be able to sing them, to perform them. And I love that.
You and I need to talk because my voice was damaged in COVID. I had it 7 times because of my autoimmune and I was coughing. It was damaged. And I ended up in a personal healing with it. And now I can sing again.
Yes, we do need to talk. So thank you for, I'm so glad that came up. Do you have a guilty pleasure song?
Okay, there are a couple. When I saw that, I was like, oh God. So one of them, if you get on my playlist, like my regular playlist, it's musicals, right? So P.A. Jesus is probably one of my guilty pleasures in there. But one of my embarrassing ones that I love so much is Just Around the River Bend. You know, the Pocahontas song?
Oh my gosh.
From Disney.
Oh my gosh. I love that.
I love Pocahontas and I love that whole story and it touched me and you know, just I love nature and that song just amazing. It's my guilty pleasure.
I love that. That's definitely another first. So So if you could think of a song that could possibly change the way people think or feel about the world around them in a positive way. What would that song be?
Oh, this is huge for me. I say this all the time and I bring it up in session all the time. And it's Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. Because we want to say that everything is awful right now. Honey, no, it's not. This is a cycle. We're just in a cycle. This earth was meant to be on fire. And as souls, if everything is going well, why change? So it has to not be going well. And when you get yourself so distracted with politics and what's going on in the news, that's called a distraction. It's distracting you from what you came here to do, which is to evolve and not to be, like you mentioned, not to chant, you know, sit on a mountaintop chanting Om. It's to be able to walk this earth in all of its chaos as the calm amongst the storm.
Mm.
And that song, if you really listen to it, we didn't start that fire, honey. It's been burning since the world's been turning.
Yes. So you were preaching to the choir because I'm a Billy Joel guy.
Me too.
I am such a Billy Joel fan. And I've had the pleasure of seeing him probably 6 to 8 times in my life. And each time I love
Jealous.
It. I
Jealous.
I love it. So
I had all of his cassettes.
Oh, did you really? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can tell you, the first Billy Joel concert I went to was the Stranger concert. My cousin Jim drove me to that concert, and we would listen to it riding our bikes when the little cassette player strapped to the handlebars. Oh my gosh.
That came out in like 79, something like that, didn't it?
Yeah. Because I think we saw him in 1980.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, that does make, it makes perfect sense.
Love that album. Glass Houses, my favorite.
I love Glass Houses so much. And the other one that I like is 52nd Street.
Oh, yeah.
With Stiletto and Until the Night. So I used to sing at a bar when I was in college called the Sassafras Lounge. It was inside of a hotel. And I would sing a lot of Billy Joel songs and things that I really enjoyed. And I sang Until the Night, and I loved singing that song. It was just such an amazing song.
We're going to get you to sing it again.
No, you know, I would love to. I would love to be able to do that. You know, it's people have said that, your voice has that raspy smoker sound to it. I said, well, it didn't used to. So unfortunately, yeah, kind of does now. But
mine did too. And I will tell you that what you do is you actually find songs that actually work with your voice.
You know what? You're right. And there are a number that I find are much easier to sing now than 4 years ago when I injured myself. But yeah, I get it. So here's the last song, last question that I have for you. And we'll go to wrap it up after this. This happens to be one of my favorite. Sometimes there are songs you hear that ring so true that they can literally stop you in your tracks. And the song's lyrics sound like they were written specifically for you or by you. What's that song?
There were two of them, so it was hard for me to choose. But
why choose between two good things? Let's go.
Okay. So one of them is 32 Flavors by Ani DiFranco. And the lyrics really say, I'm beyond your peripheral vision, so you might want to turn your head. You know, and it has everything to do with, no, I'm not normal. And there's a lot more to me than you think. There's a lot more to me. And you're going to end up eating the words that you said, because you just have to turn your head. You can't even understand me. Yeah. And the other one is Wonder by Natalie Merchant. And
I know that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And not because I'm trying to say like, I'm this big wonder. It's more that it spoke to me that I know that I'm different. And it's like, everyone's like, why are you like the way you are? Well, you know what? Yes, you're right. I'm an enigma to you. I understand that. And you know what? I confound you and astound you too. Right? And you don't understand me. Those are some of the words, the lyrics. And so they're both ones that I think earlier in my life, I had a very hard time with being clairvoyant because I was so different. And I didn't think like others. And no one understood me, even my own parents. And even my sisters, you know, they don't have that gift either. So for me, it spoke to me about, it's okay. You know, no, they don't get you. I'm beyond your peripheral vision. You might want to turn your head.
Wow, that's that really is fascinating. That's a great choice, especially for you. That's such a great choice. Well, and by the way, I should say thank you so much for sharing those. Those were fantastic. I love your choices. They're wonderful.
I'm surprised you didn't bring up I've been waiting for a girl like you story.
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. How about we do another episode and we'll talk about that.
Love it.
Yeah, I will definitely bring that up. Well, it's just about time to cue the music for today's episode. But don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone again for tuning in today. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. I'd also like to thank our very special guest, Ms. Kelly Schwagel, for joining us today. Kelly, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how are they going to do that?
Yeah, you can email me at Kelly at kellyschwagel.com. So that's my email. You can also, I actually, I'm on Facebook. You can find me there. I used to have a website. I took it down because I only work with referrals or people who message me on email who really give me their story. And I'll feel into it. Are we a good fit? Before people used to be able to just book with me. And I like to kind of vet.
No, I get that. And I do the same thing for the show. So,
yeah.
And so what I'll do is I will put everything on the show notes for today, your socials and everything. So at this point, I would just say that I'd like to invite anyone to reach out to Kelly because definitely worth your time to do so.
Thank you. And
I invite you all to head on over to the show notes where there's going to be a link for the playlist in today's episode, which is going to be amazing, as well as I mentioned, getting in touch with Kelly so you can book a session with her. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health and happiness and the perfect playlist to your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.